here with Ray Winnersko, October 12th, 89, in his office in the administration building. All right. The first questions are very brief. Name, present position here, and age, when you came to Stony Brook. When did you come to Stony Brook?
My name is Raymond Pete Manusco. I am Director of Institutional Studies at State University of Stony Brook. I am now 50 years old. And
when you joined the university?
Came here 23 years ago.
I see.
When I was 27.
Where did you come from?
I came from Sperry Gyroscope Company in Great Neck.
And who was responsible for your coming here?
Well, it was a newspaper advertisement in the paper at that time, if I recall, which I responded to, and that was for the facilities planning office. And I came here that day for interview with Dr. Doucette, Al Ryder, and Bob Dorino.
I see. The year was what? What year was it?
That was 66.
66.
I just have a correction on that. That was in mid-66, and at that point, the staff was not yet hired, and I spoke to a Richard Glasheen only, and that was the end of it. I heard nothing for about 6 months, when I was called in by Bob Dorino, and that day, then, I met with Bob Dorino, Al Ryder, and Dr. Doucette.
Why did you come to Stony Brook?
Well, I saw a great opportunity and a change of career. I was also living out in Fort Jeff Station at the time, and I was traveling some 43 miles to Great Neck every way, and that was quite a burden.
Yes.
Did that for about 10 years, or 8 to 10 years perhaps, and I wanted something different and closer to home.
What was your background in your academic work?
My background was with architectural and construction engineering. And while I did not finish college, I took some courses at Queens College in general liberal arts. But coming from Brooklyn Technical High School, where I studied architecture and construction.
Okay. What kind of work did you first do here?
Facilities planning.
Facilities planning.
Yes. Following the new construction, as the boom in construction was going on at that time, I worked with the architect Al Ryder and was liaison with contractors and architects on new buildings. And then locally, within our existing buildings, we were responsible for all the rehabs and changes that were needed by a growing faculty and staff.
Can you be specific about particular buildings? One of the gaps in my interviewing has been with regard to how the buildings were developed. Who was responsible for making the final plan system, and what kind of building, what kind of equipment, and what kind of location here on the campus. When I first came, I noticed that they had put the science buildings closest to the library, chemistry in particular, which blocked off any possibility of enlarging the library to the west. Put the graduate chemistry very close to the library also. Humanities is quite a ways off, and And the library is really the laboratory of the humanities.
Well, that, I guess, predates my coming here.
I know it does. I know that, yes.
As we know, Stonebrook was conceived for a small teacher's college in the very beginning. And there must have been a master plan architect. If I recall, it was Smith, Hinchman, and Grills who designed the first campus and placement of its buildings. That pattern was set until later, maybe in the mid-60s or thereafter, for a second master plan, a new look at the campus and its mandated expansion. And why they just had to follow a reasonable pattern since the first pattern was already set. Again, keeping academic buildings close to the core, the center of campus and the library as the focus.
Right, there was a plan of a number of fingers out away from the center. The science being one finger, engineering being another, social sciences, humanities. That was one theory, with the dormitories on the outside. Is that as you understand it?
Yes, I think I've seen those plans early on. Dormitories, the first ones, of course, G and H, as we know, to the north side of campus.
Right.
And then following that, when there was the expansion call, they then wound up on the south side, on the periphery.
Did you have anything to do with Steve Elwin Stevens?
Very little. He was high up in the organization at SUNY,
yes.
And I don't know that I ever met the man.
Can you say anything about the individuals who were responsible for let's say some of the later buildings? What about the lecture hall? Was that already here? The main lecture hall?
No, that was in construction when I arrived. The day I arrived, they were breaking ground for the student union building. Social sciences, or today's psychology, two buildings, and the lecture hall were under construction.
I see. The original social science cluster, two buildings, with a breezeway, is now what?
Psychology.
That's now psychology.
Yes.
Two buildings. Two buildings.
Yes.
So they've been broken out from the social and behavioral sciences.
Yes.
What buildings did you have a hand in, or what buildings were started after you came?
I cannot recall.
Biology?
I cannot recall the specific buildings for the specific months. There was an awful lot that happened right about the time I came. I recall very early on, the Earth Space Science building was started, like right after the lecture hall and the student union. The large science buildings were later.
Graduate chemistry.
In the early 70s.
Math and physics.
Yes. I had my hands in a little sprinkling of each, perhaps by working through the job meetings as construction was in progress. We used to float around the different staff members to the different job sites as needed.
What do you think about the quality of supervision, whether by local people here connected with the university or Albany, people in the construction fund? We have quite a few headaches.
Yes. I'm sure it can be done many other ways, but working in this environment between the SUNY folks in Albany, the construction fund in Albany, and our local architects and engineers just is cause for confusion. Things work, but I'm sure things were delayed along the way and could have been streamlined. Now, this is true in all complex organizations. In today's
construction management and turnkey operations, I'm sure there are equal number of delays and problems.
What was John Toll's input into the nature of these buildings? Or who supervised or who directed the development of the plans for each of the buildings?
Academic programs were designed by the specific departments or divisions. For instance, if we take biological sciences, I think it was Ray Jones that was instrumental in putting together the program of space needs for that complex, working closely with Al Ryder and later Charlie Wagner, who came aboard in maybe July 67. Together they would come up with the program of spaces required. This program was sent to SUNY folks for approval, of course, after Dr. Toll was approving of the local plan. SUNY would comment on that program. They would add and subtract spaces, change the size of spaces to be more in line with guidelines as they saw it. And at some point, we would compromise, and the program was given to an architectural firm for planning. That planner might have been the master plan architect, who then would solicit to architectural firms individually for a project.
The university didn't have any hand in the selection of architects?
No, I believe we had a hand there. That was above my level at that point. But architects would put in bids to SUNY Central and the construction fund, and the campus would be in SUNY upon decision-making time for selecting that architect. So yes, we had a say in the choice.
Do you know why it was that the main stage of the Fine Arts Center was cut from 1,500 to 1,100?
No, I don't remember that one. Not at all.
It's just barely big enough for an orchestra.
I remember I said I started in facilities planning, but I was only there 4 years.
4 years.
So 4 years. So at about January 1970, I was taken out of there. I requested to move to long-range planning under Bill Moran.
All right.
So fine arts may have been designed in the early 70s, perhaps, when I was no longer in that department. I then moved over to the numbers side under Bill Moran.
You know where Bill is now?
Yes, I believe he's still at the University of North Carolina at Greensboro.
I interviewed him a couple years ago. Do you have any comments as to the quality of the architects that we've had? DeMoss, McCorney, and Weigel, for instance?
No, I couldn't comment.
They were the ones, I believe, who built the Union.
Yes, and they were master plan architect at one point.
Yes, right.
But we've had at least four of those along the way.
Oh, really?
I think, as a master plan architect, yes.
Do you remember the name of George Dudley?
I'm afraid not.
He was one of the three commissioners, I guess, for the construction plan. Do you remember names of Frank Matsky?
No, that one does not ring a bell.
All right. He was up in the hallway. Did we have to take the lowest bidder on equipment, such as elevators?
I could not say. I was not a part of that process.
Because we've had all kinds of trouble with elevators.
I know.
Right. Can you say anything about Charlie Wagner's contributions to the campus facilities?
Yes. I think I held him in high esteem as a clever architect, a clever landscaper, and a hard worker. I think in the early days there, of his tenure at Stony Brook, he contributed much to the enhancement of campus. However, things get torn up quite quickly after being enhanced, given the growth pattern of accomplishment here at Stony Brook. But what he did in his time here, I think improved the campus at that time.
By torn up, what do you mean?
Once a project is completed, and perhaps walks and paving and lawns and shrubs and trees, and then with the dynamic growth of this institution, there was need once again for further construction, to put up another building, to change the position of a roadway or a walkway. In turn, it started all over again, and there was mud once again, only to be rectified after that project was finished. But I worked well with Charlie Wagner, and I thought he was a very good architect.
Any further comments on the facility's side?
Well, I'm impressed with the amount of growth that I've seen here at Stony Brook. I look back prior to this interview and can say that when I arrived, there were hardly 20 buildings on this campus in late 66, comprising about 1 million square feet. This would be outside gross square feet. And today, in my bookkeeping that I'm responsible for, I report slightly better than 100 buildings and almost 9 million outside gross square feet in 23 years. That
includes a hospital and...
Oh, yes, it does.
Yes.
The entire complex, yes. So the amount of construction here has been phenomenal in this roughly 1,000 acres that we have at Stony Brook. So I'm excited and happy to have been a part of it. We should all be proud of what has come about here.
Now to switch. Do you want to say anything further about facilities?
No, that would cover it. Unless something comes to mind along the way.
Okay.
We'll add something.
Now let's switch to what you're doing now. Your studies, how do you break down institutional studies?
We're an office of institutional studies that comprises many aspects of data that is needed by the administration. One is the facilities data. What we have, how we use it, and who uses it. And we have resources of faculty and staff counts on this campus. Access is given to us for the personnel file, for the payroll file, for instance. We can report salary data, counts of men, women, black and white, students, and the same for staff and faculty. We have access to expenditure data and can look at the expenses of the English department, for instance, in pursuing English instruction at this campus. That expenditure is broken into salary dollars and support dollars and OTPS dollars that support the English, other than personal services dollars,
I say,
non-salary dollars that support the instruction of English at this campus. And together, we can cost the instruction, which we do, as to dollars per credit hour or dollars per contact hour of teaching, broken to undergraduate and graduate courses. And that's just endless, the amount of data that we can manipulate, and that is required in today's organization. We do all the reporting to state and SUNY and federal officials in counts of students, counts of credit hours delivered, cost of instruction. We do answer surveys, countless surveys across the year, again to state and local agencies and private agencies that request information about our college. Those will usually funnel to this office, where we have quite a consistent handle on data and can report out consistently. We have put much data on the bulletin board of All-in-One, which runs through the fax machine here on campus. And therefore, All-in-One are electronic messages that we can wire to each other to a computer by using the All-in-One software and the VAC system. It's in that system that we can have a bulletin board unique to this office and its product. And so we have much data there than others on campus, whoever is on All-in-One. I understand it's about 1,000 users today on campus. And they can access data automatically on their own without having to telephone me for that data. Some fine trends in enrollment over time, the undergraduate full-time count, for instance, over time, the graduate part-time counts, the number of faculty, and on it goes, electronic computing. Now, that is the latest that we've maintained for the university at large. So I'll stop there, but the data is our game, and its manipulation for reporting and for administration's decisions that are called for.
Do you know, for instance, they have state of the Stony Brook Foundation endowment?
No, that is outside of this area.
Do you know the salary ranges and how they have changed?
Yes.
Over the years?
Yes. We do those studies by rank and discipline each year in exchanging with other institutions in the nation. And then we can get back a report that on average the faculty, the associate faculty, associate professor faculty at 57 institutions in the United States will have an average salary of X and also cite a low and a high salary for that rank. Likewise for the professorial rank or the assistant rank, it's always by discipline.
Can you offhand place Stony Brook with regard to our salary ranges in relation to other institutions, let's say the Big Ten or the Ivy League? Or
yes, we are generally at the upper level of salary for the disciplines at Stony Brook here. But living in this high-cost area, it is required that the salaries be at that level. We match pretty closely with California, another high-cost area.
California, meaning Berkeley?
Well, I have not seen their salary levels. But in general, let's see, it's San Diego, University of California at San Diego. The other one at Irvine, I think we see those salaries, and we're like them. We moved to institutions in the Midwest where salaries will be somewhat lower.
Do you know anything about the endowments, institutions?
No.
Not just the Big Ten, or the Ivy League, the top 20 endowments of the country, or that sort of thing?
I only know that by reading the Chronicle. They publish that annually, I'm sorry. And it's right here in this office.
Michael, you have that?
Yes. We subscribe to the Chronicles, and much valuable data in there. Every issue is valuable.
Okay. All right, let's get in now to quality of students and how we compare with the rest of the system and how that quality here has changed ups and downs. What can you say about that? How do you want to say it?
Well, I've seen quite a change over time in the quality of our incoming students.
I'll go back to your figures then.
Well, I don't have information from 1962, our first year at Stony Brook. But I do have something from 1967 through 88, and roughly I could say from this compilation of data that the average high school grade reported by students in 1967, some 1,300 students, some 61.5% felt that their high school grades were at the A level or better. That has declined across 1973, 78, 83, and 88. And whereas that figure was 61.5% back in 67, in 88 it was some 32.9%, again for about 1,200 students. The number of students attending Stony Brook, as for reasons for attending Stony Brook, regarding the academic reputation, again back in 67, some 85% acknowledged that academic reputation was a major reason for enrolling at Stony Brook. That figure has been reduced to some 63.8%
of the students in 1988 as attending Stony Brook for its academic reputation. We are consistently regarded, however, in many of the surveys that are undertaken here, that this is a fine institution with high quality faculty and scholarship. We are finding also that with the change in demographics of the areas in which we live, on Long Island and New York City, that Stony Brook is attracting more recently increasing numbers of permanent residents, children of families who are first generation to this country, students who lack good English skills, perhaps, creating increased problems for Stony Brook and English. Those students, I believe, I just cannot find a figure at the moment, but they're increasing numbers and percentages of permanent residents and recent immigrants to this country as enrolling in Stony Brook compared to some 20 years ago.
Permanent residents.
Are they
just American citizens?
No, they are not yet citizens.
Oh, I see.
They're that middle step of permanent residency.
I see.
On their way to becoming citizens. We look back and find that in the mid-60s, perhaps, we had a population here of students who were in the range of 50% of Jewish faith, and that today has declined to some 15% Jewish. It's just about an exact flip with the Roman Catholic population, and today we register some 50% of our students who profess to be Roman Catholic, and in the old days that group measured about 15%. So there's been this flip from Jewish to Catholic in a 20-year period.
What about Protestants?
Well, they're in there perhaps at the 33% level, if I recall, and that has not changed. No, I don't think that one has changed very much. We find that in those older days, too, the students were more prepared for college than today's students are.
Why is that? What's your guess on that?
Well, I think it's a problem in the state and the country as a whole, the quality of the secondary education today in our schools. It's not only unique to Stony Brook, we read about it in all walks of life. And in fact, the president was at the University of Virginia recently, President Bush, with all the governors, and that's just the thing they were talking about. Improve the quality of education throughout the United States. If we wanted to cite quality as measured by high school average over time, in fall 74, our mean high school average of all freshman applicants was about 87, and in 88, it has turned out to be about 83.4, while our mean high school average of admitted freshmen in 74 was 87.3, it also has declined to about 85.9. The institution has also accepted more recently a larger percentage of alternative students. While back in 1977, some 17% of our incoming freshman class were admitted here under the alternative program. Today, or in fall 88, that percentage has grown to some 34%.
Alternative meaning what?
Alternative meaning that they are not at the 85% high school average level. They are somewhat below 85. So the quality has quite declined.
Are these people blacks? Chicanos?
No, not necessarily. No. Recent finding of statistics published by CILI showed quite the contrary. That we have attracted brighter minority students than the other three centers. And that after 1 year, our attrition rate was less than at other three university centers.
That is related to minorities.
Yes. It's not that the presence of the minority students has brought the average down, quite to the contrary. We have been attracting brighter minority students.
Would you have a breakdown of students, foreign students, by country?
Yes, that is recorded every semester. The foreign students on the undergraduate side here comprise about 300 students only. And that is roughly equal to the number of students that we attract from out of state. The balance of the United States will bring us 300 students. And in addition, 300 foreign students are in the population of some 9,000 undergraduates full-time at Stony Brook.
You're talking about total population, not simply freshmen.
That's right.
Yes.
Well, I could talk about it any way you want. It's all here. We talk about high school average, quality,
and we have
the category of academic admit. That quality level has fluctuated very little in 50 years here, on average. 89 was the high school average of our academic admitted students. And give or take 0.2 on either side of 89. That's been consistent. The problem is that the numbers have declined. The numbers coming here on the academic category. With the increased number of the alternative students who are of somewhat less quality, altogether then, the total quality has declined. But yeah, those admitted academically remain as they have for some 15 years perhaps. And that is at the 89 level. SAT scores, another measure. They continue to decline slightly, but they do decline. The state and the nation has also seen a decline, as we read the literature. Our academic admitted students have recently been at the combined score of 1050 5 years ago, perhaps. We're now down to 1020 and maybe even 1010 for fall 89 incoming class. Academic admits only. Of course, with the total population, we fall below 1,000.
Do you have any figures on graduate students?
Yes, we do. In what respect?
Well, graduate
record exam? No, that I do not have.
I
that's anything at the graduate school only.
I see.
And in the department. The size of our graduate population has grown rather nicely lately, and especially the part-time graduate. You're talking about those counts?
Yes, I'm thinking about that.
Well, we were doing a big business in the teacher training and continuing education in the mid-70s. Our graduate population on the part-time side at the West Campus had peaked at 3,351 part-time students in fall 74. And that has continued to slide downward.
When you talk about positive elements, and talk about the quality of the faculty.
Well,
you mentioned the sciences, and you've mentioned the health sciences.
I'm sorry. When we talk of high-quality faculty and scholarship, I don't mean it only to be the physical sciences and health sciences. Not at all.
All right.
I'm sorry.
Good.
I just pointed to those as examples.
Yes.
Our philosophy department is rated very highly here at Stony Brook. Our music department as well, with all the press we've had a year or two ago with the fine musicians, our graduate students going to the Soviet Union and all over the world. Our English department as well. So it's throughout. Our psychology, our economics are well known. So I could not put a dollar value on how to improve things, but we just must continue to work at it, to keep it in the front of all that we do. Some positive things have happened in the past few years. Think about it. We just have instituted this Honors College for high-achieving high school students. I think they must have a 95 high school average. They must have SAT scores of 1,200. To be considered for the Honors College.
Well, where is the Honors College? Is it located physically?
I'm not sure of its location, but we challenge the students here. They're given mentors. They're giving high-level instruction with premier faculty on this campus. We have the Eureka program, which is maybe 3 years old at this point, and that has brought highly motivated high school students to work side by side with our faculty in their freshman year in doing research projects. That has come on very strong, I understand, with students being attracted to this program.
They are freshmen here, is that it?
Yes. Yes.
I see.
They express an interest to do research in their freshman year. There's an office coordinated within the undergraduate studies office for administrators there to put students in touch with faculty in the areas of their interest. We have the residential college programs now. One very recently was instituted for science and technology, I believe. I forget which dormitory it is. And I believe that's the third one. These are all small steps in the overall settling of this problem, but it takes time, a long time.
What individuals, as you look back, stand out in the development of the university?
Well, I go back to my very early days, and one person I really admired was Myron Doucette. And of course, you know him.
Yes.
Yes, you do. Yes, you do. And he was a special, very special person. And right alongside of him was Bill Moran, who I admired highly as a prince of a person. One to be proud to work for. And as I come more forward...
Are you thinking of them as personalities? Or are you
No, I'm thinking of those as great assets to this institution.
Yeah.
Yes. In the early days and what they accomplished was very important in those days. And then, of course, there was Dr. Toll, the president, and Dr. Pond, his executive vice president, who together, I feel, really built this place. And under Jack Marburger now, he has a different style. He came here with an established campus, with its problems, of course. And he has been a good communicator and arbitrator and leader for this campus over the past 9 years. How many others would you like to hear about? Faculty? I admire Norman Goodman. As a very caring, important faculty member to this institution. One, I think, who has worked above and beyond in every capacity possible on the faculty at Stony Brook for such a long while. John Truxell, I admire also. Elof Carlson. I'm sure I could go on, and then I'm going to forget someone anyway.
Sure.
And I apologize.
Did you know Stanley Ross?
No. The name I know.
It was Dean.
Yes.
Well, I appointed him, and I also appointed Myron Doucette. In your work, did you have any contacts with individuals in Albany?
Yes, on occasion.
With whom?
Marty Phillips, I guess. I dealt with an awful lot. And he was more in the facilities end of the SUNY organization. And he would be instrumental in approving buildings for this campus based on the expected students and faculty that we expected. He would be the model.
Is he
person.
Still there?
No, he has died 5 years ago, perhaps. But all facilities justifications that the campus sent up to SUNY went by way of his office for approval, assessment, I guess, to whether Stony Brook deserved this building. And with the base information of the physical space inventory that I had charge of here to maintain, we looked at the base amount of space that we had in line with the numbers of students that we had, and then projecting students for 5 and 10 years out and the projects that we needed to house those students and faculty. He decided whether the grad bio building should be 200,000 square feet or 150,000 square feet or 250,000 square feet. So he would look at the model and the guidelines for space. So I interacted with him quite a bit. And the people that worked for him.
Did he have any bias in favor of Stony Brook or against Stony Brook? Or?
No, I believe he was a supporter of Stony Brook.
I think he was.
Oh, for sure. For sure. He, too, will always be remembered as a nice gentleman to work with.
Was he in Alan Stevens'
yes,
office?
Yes, in the older days he was in that office.
I see.
Then there was reshuffling up there and different patterns along the way. Of course, the institutional research people in SUNY I've dealt with for a long time. Dr. Sherwin Iverson, Dr. Tom Freeman, Tommy Annis on the financial side, Bill Anslow.
Anslow?
Anslow.
A-N-S-L-O-W.
Anslow.
So those are all names that are strange to me. This is... Okay.
Well, Bill Anslow's been there 20 years, I guess. The others.
He's still there.
Yes, he is. And Tom Annis and Sherwin Iverson, also, I bet 20 years.
Okay. Well, I think I've run out of questions, Ray.
I think I've covered all my my notes, too, that I had jotted down before you arrived.
Well, you've been very systematic about it. That's good. So when you came, we were under 2,000, is that right?
No, just under 4,000.
Under 4,000 when in 66?
Yes.
I see. It's 4 years on this campus.
We probably had some 500 acres at that time. We were deeded some 400 originally, if I remember.
480.
Okay.
Over a stretch of time, the original grant was 480, but the deeds were staggered for tax purposes. Not those tax purposes. That's the way he gave us Sunwood and his 29 acres around Sunwood in sections.
So would you say that we had 500 acres in 66?
I think we probably had more.
Okay, more.
I'll tell you why. Because they acquired the 150 acres on the east side of Nickel Road before Johnny came. He came in 65.
Right.
I remember Ford Melville's chief factotum, Bayless Lanoose, calling me and saying, "You better get that land on the other side of Nichols Road before some developer gets it." Because we had not anticipated Levitts coming in on the west side of Nichols Road as far up as they did. I think the main difficulty was that the Board of Trustees and possibly the central office never looked very far ahead as to what this institution might become 25, 30 years. I talked with back and forth with Herb Gordon, who at the time in the central office was in charge of land acquisition for the whole system. And I urged him to get the land across the street and also the land down below us where the major parking lot is. And he would report back and say that the trustees keep saying that they're not in the land acquisition business, the land banking business. That was the phrase.